Thank you for listening to the Truths We Hide podcast, created and founded by your host, Annette, the founder of A Wild Ride Call Life. Also, a big thank you to all of our sponsors for each and every episode that is aired. We have so much support from them and all of our listeners. You can find more information at www.awildridecalllife.com. Hey, you guys, thank you for being on here for another episode of the Truths We Hide podcast. I am like, my hands are sweaty. I'm all excited because my stomach's like in knots. But so we have Steve Sims on here. And if you don't know who he is, you are missing out. So you need to go. I'm going to have all his website information, his coaching, his distillery, his this, his that, because it's so much. But today I wanted to dig into who Steve Sims is from childhood all the way up until how he got here. Because you know that I love to talk about mental health. I like to bring on real people with real stories, because we didn't just get here overnight. It took some real shit to get here, and I'm so excited to have him on. So thank you so much, Steve, for taking the time and for being on here. I'm like totally fangirling right now.
I think you may have got me confused with someone interesting, so you may want to kind of calm it down a notch.
I'm calm.
All right.
So, well, let's go over really quick. So Steve Sims. SteveDSims.com, SimsSpeakEasy.com, all the things. But where did Steve come from? What is his background story?
Well, this probably is where it gets boring, I suppose, because I think my story, you know, I've traveled the world. I've got up with to stuff with lots of famous people. But my conduit, my igniter, was the exact same as it is for every entrepreneur. You know, we wake up one day and we're pissed off. We're aggravated. You know, something doesn't work and we're like, oh my God, why doesn't that work? And then we go and fix it. That's what entrepreneurs are. Someone said to me, a friend of mine, Joe Polish, he said, it's aggravated oysters that make pearls. Mm-hmm. And I think as entrepreneurs, we start off annoyed with something and then go and find a way to do it. So I grew up in the 80s in East London. My family owned a very, very tiny little construction firm. We did everything from like home extensions to, you know, sometimes office buildings, but most of the time it was like the small stuff. And so I finished school at the age of 15. We finished school earlier then, and then we went on to college. I didn't go on to college because I couldn't see the point. So I finished school at 15, went straight onto the building site, and then thought, hang on a minute, is this it? Now, of course, I had the privilege and the gift of no Instagram to tell me how inadequate my life was at the time. So I never had any of that. So I just grew up going, is this it? You know, is there anything more exciting, or am I on the building site? And there was one day, some people may have heard this story, but it's very important to repeat, and probably always will be. People expect the big, wonderful things to come from like the big, wonderful experiences you create. You expect me to tell you a story about how Elon Musk changed my world or Elton John changed my philosophy. But it was my granddad, who was one of the biggest, thickest Irish guys. He was just like a solid tree of a guy. And I was like, you know, I'm a big fella, but I always looked at him. He was 6 foot something, but for some reason, I always thought he was like 7 foot. He was like a giant. But he was like 80 years old. And I remember I was like 16, I think around 16 years old, and I was on the building site. And I got to the top of the scaffolding, and I had a bigger pile of bricks on my shoulder. And the one person at the top of the scaffolding was my dad. He run the construction group, you know, the brickies. Mm-hmm. And there was my dad. And then next to him was his brother, my uncle. Couple of his sons, my cousins. Now, one of them was like 18 or 19, thought he was the toughest lad in the planet. The other one was mid-20s. And then after them was my granddad in his 80s. And so I saw my entire family tree. I saw everything. There was my timeline through my teenage years into my like early 20s. then my uncle, then my dad, then my grand. I saw everything there, and everything froze. And my dad yelled at me because I was stood stationary with my eyes open, my jaw dropped, and he yelled at me to put the bricks down and go and get some more. And come tea break time, I run into this shed. And in England, it rains. It always rains in England. And I was in this shed, and everyone's trying to get warm. So it stinks. It's noisy. And there was a couple of heaters either end of this old caravan that we had with no wheels. And my granddad was near this old caravan and near this old heater trying to get warm. And he was 80, so everyone was letting him be closer to. And I, you know, can I squeeze through all the guys? And I got up to granddad. And I went, granddad, did you ever think you'd be doing this at your age? Now, bearing in mind, that was the kind of question that should have resulted in me getting my lights knocked out. You know, he was a big thundering lump of a lad. And he didn't even look at me. He just blew into his cup of tea, trying to cool it down before he took a sip. And he went, son. And I remember this word for word, the smell, the atmosphere, so perfectly still. And he said, son, if you don't quit today, you'll be me tomorrow. And then took a sip of his tea. Never looked at me. Never paid any attention to me. And the entire room went quiet. And I was like, and I knew I had to do something. I knew something had to be done. And I didn't know what an entrepreneur was. Bearing in mind, anyone over the age of 21 years old, we lived in a period where if you were an entrepreneur, it was because you couldn't get a real job. You know, if in the 80s and 90s you were an entrepreneur, it was because you were selling stolen radios out of the back of your car or something, or dodgy car vehicles. Entrepreneurism was not something revered like it is today. You know, you say you're an entrepreneur, people go, oh, Elon Musk, Richard Branson, you're Mark Cuban. You know, there's people that you can mold yourself around. But an entrepreneur there was someone who was kind of like dodging and diving, doing things under the table. It wasn't a name that gives the trophies that it does now. So I didn't know what it was, but I knew inside me this wasn't it, what I was supposed to be doing. And I came out of the caravan, and I run up to my dad. Now, my dad hated being called dad on the building site, okay? And he had this Irish name called Cuz, you know, like cousin. It was short for cousin, but Cuz, you know, like someone says, hey, brother. You know, he was like, hey, Cuz, you know, that kind of thing. So he always wanted me to call him Cuz. Didn't matter. My head had been blown in the caravan. I came out and I was like, dad, 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 dad. I'm yelling crazily, you know, trying to get my dad's attention as he's walking off to his position. And he turns around at me like with his eyes and wanted just to slap me. He's like, what? Of course, everyone's looking at me like some little kid running up to his daddy. And I went, dad, 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 dad. And I was like the Energizer Bunny on acid. I was like, dad, dad, I went up there and I saw you on, and I came down and I went into the tea hut and I went up there, granddad, you ever think you'd be doing? And I was like spouting like crazy. And I went, dad, I've got to quit. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I can't be granddad tomorrow. And that was it. And he looked at me. Now, the funny thing was, I kind of feel a bit sad about this. My granddad walked behind me, because he was that big. He was like, you know, something massive walking behind you. And he stopped and he looked at my dad. My dad looked up at him. My dad wasn't big. He looked up at him. Then he looked at me and he went, we're light-handed. You finish up Friday. And I could then hear the guy walk on behind me. And the sad thing is I never saw my granddad ever again. I never got the chance to tap on his shoulder and say, hey, fella, you have no idea what you propelled me into, what you lit up, what you activated inside of me. But it was my granddad at that moment. Now, while my granddad fueled me to go forward and my dad realized that I had something to go for, whether or not I got there or not, you know, you want to get in the fight. You know, he knew that I was ready and he wanted to kind of like let me go to see what I was capable of. That night, when I got home and my dad told my mum that I had quit the business, the family business, oh my God, the relationship between me and my mum was never the same. In fact, I'll be honest, and I haven't spoken with her for, I think, 30 years. She straight away said to me, you think you're better than us. You came at me flying. You think you're better. And I went, no, hang on a minute. I think I'm better than this. I think I can be better. I think I can. Why do you not want me to go and change? Now, I, you know, skip fast forward like 10, 12 years. I had got loads of jobs that were wrong. You know, I just bounced in. A typical entrepreneur, we jump out of a frying pan into a volcano. We don't know what we're doing. We just go. And so made loads of mistakes, got into the wrong jobs, got fired. I remember going to two different jobs in one day because one said we're hiring and we'll hire you on the spot. And so I started and I got fired from two jobs in one day, you know, which was pretty spectacular. But I kept trying to do things until I could find something that I could get into. I started working with rich people because I wanted to know how rich people thought, how they talked. You know, they always say you are the combination of the five people you're with. Mm-hmm. Before I knew that statement, I had one of my own was you are the room you're in. So I thought to myself, you know, I've got to be in a room full of rich people. I know what broke bikers are like because that's the room I'm always in. So I've got to get, so I found a way of getting out. I became successful or what, I became financially good. Mm-hmm. And I'd always ridden motorbikes. And I was actually working at the time for this car company called Ferrari. Pretty cool. And when I came back to England, I was actually living in Hong Kong at the time. When I came back to England, they lent me a Ferrari, which they always did when I used to travel around. So I went to see my mum and dad. And my dad was like, well done, son. You know, and he was kind of proud of me. Although here was the funny thing. He did come up to the car and he go, oh, I really like Lotus. He didn't even realize it was a Ferrari, you know. But when I told mum what I was doing, she was so bitter. And then my dad went outside to the garage to get some beers. My mum actually put something down like some little nibbles in front of her. She said to me, are you selling drugs? She couldn't believe that I had tried to do something different and real with my life. It was easier for her to believe that I'd got involved in drugs and I was making money that way. So my mum never connected. And it was a real shame. My dad died a few years ago. I don't think he really knew the impact that he had on my life. But my mum, she walked away from me when I was like in my early teens.
Oh my goodness. So how did you find yourself to keep showing up after that? Because you had lost a relationship with your mom because you were just trying to better yourself. So how did you keep waking up and say, okay, this is, I'm going to keep doing this, even though this just happened?
I'm going to answer the question with a little story, if I may.
Yes.
About 6 years, I live in Los Angeles, California now. I've lived in Hong Kong, Bangkok, Geneva, London, Palm Beach, and I think about 15 years ago, I moved over here to California, and I love it here. Mm-hmm. And I think it was maybe like 9 or 10 years ago, and I was in my flow. You know, I was doing well. I was meeting some good people. We had a dinner party, and at the dinner party was some, you know, it was a pretty impressive dinner party. And I couldn't believe who had accepted an invite to come to my dinner party. And a friend of mine there was big in the Marvel world, you know, the movies, Marvel. Yeah. And so he was, you know, quite big in that. And one of the dinner time conversations came up. And I've got to admit, I was quite in awe of these people that were now my friends at this table. And I've never taken things for granted. My wife has always said, I'm a 53-year-old, three-year-old. You know, I just always go, oh, look at that. Oh, can I touch that? I'm always like that. And we're at this table and I'm in awe that, you know, I've got all these people at my table and I'm thinking, damn, you know, this is cool, you know. And the Marvel fellow, I won't mention his name or name drop here, but he turned around and he went, all right, let's have a dinner time game. And I'm like, oh, what are we going to do? And he said, right, you are a superhero. What is your superpower? Now, he was sat opposite me, and the table game started at the left of him about four people down. So I had like about six people before he got to me. So I'm like, oh, my God, what's it going to be? It's going to be the power of strength. It's going to be the power of character. I'm going through my head thinking, what can my superpower be that makes me sound really cool, you know, in front of these titans in the industry? So my wife was sat to the left of me, and it gets around to me, and it went, Steve, you're a superhero. What is your superpower? And I'd come up with a couple, and I can't even remember what they were. But I was like, and I wanted to pretend as though I was just thinking about it, you know, when you, and I knew it was crap. I was like, well, it's funny you should say that. And my wife turned around, and she went, I know what it is. Now, bear in mind, I met my wife when she was 16 and I was 17. So we've been together forever. She's seen the ups, the downs, the downs, the downs, the more downs, the real downs, and then the ups again. So she's been through it all. But she went, I know what his superpower is. And I thought, well, this is going to be better, because it's always better when someone else says something nice about you than you. So I'm thinking, my wife, you know, she's got my back here. And she turned around, she said, it's the power of ignorance. And I thought, crap. And everyone at the table went quiet. And everyone started to look at me. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm getting divorced in the morning. You know, in this table, it was one of those pinnacle moments when I thought, this is it. I've made it. My table, these people have come to my home. This is it. This is where I am. I am some shit here, you know? And my wife just called me ignorant in front of all of these people. And so everything was quiet. And she turned around and she said, well, don't you think it is? And of course, everyone wanted to be polite to Claire. Now, Claire, you've got to understand, she's about 105 pounds when she's soaking wet. She's at 5'5". Actually, she's 5'7", but she tells everyone she's 5'5". She's the tiniest, petite little British flower that scares the shit out of me on a daily basis. And so she turned around and she went, well, don't you think it's ignorance? And of course, everyone wants to be polite to Claire, you know, and they're like, well, and she, no, think about it. Steve gets into situations where he has no ability to be in, and then he pulls it off. She said, how many times has he done something with the Pope or done something with you guys or found this or got in there? And you literally sat back in your chair and gone, how the hell did he pull that off? And they all went, that's right. She said, because he's ignorant to the point of failure. He can't see that it won't go his way. He can't see if they will say no, and he can't hear if they do say no. He keeps going. He's ignorant to his ability to fail at anything he goes for. Now, isn't that good for him? And they will, oh, that's good. Now, I suddenly thought to myself, all right, maybe I'm not getting divorced. But as I grew up, I realized that whenever you get into anything, it was a long way around to answer your question, but whenever anyone gets involved in anything and they're on that precipice, they're on that edge, you know, whether it be writing down a business plan, whether it be, you know, researching online about a new project, whether it be going to dinner with someone to talk about a new business, whether it be to go on stage, whenever you're on that cusp, you're faced with two options. Go or think about it. Now, the downside is most people today, they think about it. How many brilliant business plans have been written that have never been actioned? How many coulda, woulda, shouldas have we heard people say in their life? I've just gone, oh, I'd like to work with Elon Musk. How do I make it happen? I'll try this. Well, let me just start. And I've just started. And I've failed. And I've asked the wrong person. I've presented myself badly. But I've still got forward. Now, people don't realize that the more you fail, the more you grow. You see, you only fail when you stop, you know? You only lose money when the stock goes down and you sell out. If you leave stuff alone, if you focus, if you grow, if you analyze where it didn't work, then that no longer becomes a failure. It becomes an education. So when my mum turned my back on me, I was faced with two options. I sold myself and lessened myself and settled to look after my mum. And some of you out there may be going, well, you should. You should stand by your mum. Why? You can't pick your family. You can focus on your life. Now, trust me, I've had heartache. I know what that's like. And it's a very painful thing for me to say that I have to look at me rather than those people around me. My mum made her choice. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, bearing in mind, I had my dad going, get out, go get. And I had my mum going, you think you're better than us. You know? So I had a cheerer and I had a jeerer in the same family dynamic. That really messes with your head. The only thing I could do was hopefully make it strong and come back and support them, of which that's what I did. The relationship was never good, but at least I was able to make sure the bills were paid and the car was new and stuff like that. So I was able to come back, but I knew this was my life. Mm-hmm. I have got to go and get it. I had my granddad, I had my dad, I had my cousins, I had my uncle, I had everyone else around me, but the one person that jeered me was my mum. So with those numbers, who should I have settled with?
Right.
It's a tough one.
Right. No, thank you for sharing that. It is very difficult. I just really quick. I remember when I wanted to join the army, my dad was like, "Girls don't join the army," and I did it anyway. I did it anyway, and it was very difficult for him to accept. He thought it was just easy for me to just say, "Okay, I'm done with it." I said, "No, Dad, it's a contract. I have to do it for so many years, or whatever the case is." And it was very difficult for him to process that for the whole 17 and a half years I was in. But I did it for me. So
you got to do it for you. I suppose this would be a nice segue into the world of being selfish. If you say the word selfish, if you go into a room and you go, "Hey, who here is selfish?" No one's going to put their hand up because it's a negative word. You know, I don't want to be selfish. We're taught from a very early age, "Hey, don't be selfish. Share your sweets. Don't be selfish, you know, share that," you know. So we get selfish as connotation as being a negative. But let's rephrase that. When you're on a flight and you get on there, you sit down and the steward stands up and says, "Ladies and gentlemen, in the case of an emergency," and the face mask falls from the rooftop, from the ceiling. When was the last time you heard them say, "Hey, don't be a selfish git, put it on someone else first, and then you"? They don't, mm-hmm. do they? They mm-hmm. say, "Look after you." Mm-hmm. Unless you're strong, unless you're breathing right, unless you're okay, you can't help anybody else. So today you've got to go, "Okay, what am I made of?" And look after yourself. Unless you're strong, you can't look after someone else. Someone said to me before, it's like picking someone up with two broken hands. You can't do it. You have to be in a position of strength. You have to be in a position of self-power and commitment and confidence. Then you can reach out and help people. So I'm telling you quite openly, change your perspective of being selfish and look how much weaker you are making yourself by putting up with these people.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
No, I love that you said that, because I'm sitting here thinking I had to teach my daughter that, because she loves that. Both my kids have really big hearts, but I have to remind my daughter, who's 20, you need to do stuff for you. You can't always give, because you forget about yourself. And, you know, it takes her a minute to process that. And she's like, "Well, I can't let her do this, or I can't let them do that." I said, "Yeah, but what about you?" You know, so it applies to so many different things. And yeah, I love that you said that. Oh my gosh. So I heard something. You love working with the community. And one of the things that I was told that you love to do, you work with prisoners. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. And it all started funny. I like to try loads of things. And you know, I can only tell you if I don't like something, if I've tried it. It's amazing how many people go, "Oh, I don't like that. Have you ever tried it?" "Well, no, but I know I don't like it," you know? And I'm like, "Well, shut up." So I had a friend of mine once said to me, God, this was over 3 years ago, a brilliant guy in Canada called Jason Gaynard, and he run this brilliant event called Mastermind Talks. And he phones me up one day and he went, "Hey, it's my birthday." I was like, "Yeah, so what?" And he says, "I'm coming down to LA. And I was scared it was going to be, I'm going to have a party, because I'm not really a party hound. You know, I don't like loud music. You know, it's not really me. Stick me in a corner with an old fashioned and I'm good. So I'm thinking, I don't want to do this. He said, and guess what, Steve? I'm going to prison. Well, what do you mean you're going to prison? And he said, I've met up with this woman called Kat Hoke, who is the head of the, she was the head at the time of a prison education system called DeFi Ventures. Now, since then, it's been taken over by Andrew Glazer. And so he said, so what I'm doing is I'm going to go into prison and I'm going to take some, you know, friends of ours, and we're going to kind of like see what it's like, and we're going to see how they do the training program. We're going to get to talk to prisoners. Now, I've always grown by challenging myself. I think travel is a wonderful way of becoming educated. I've always said I'm an incredibly educated man, but school had nothing to do with that. But when you travel and you are in Palestine and you're understanding about the culture and their history and their perspective, and then you go to Spain and then you go to England, and you go to England, sorry, America, and you go to France, and you go to Italy, and you go to Japan. These different cultures teach you different perspectives and teach you to understand better. And so given the chance of going into the prison, there were two things. One, it would challenge my perspectives of talking to a murderer, to a drug dealer, you know, and we were going to a level 4 maximum security prison. You don't get there by getting a parking ticket and forgetting to take your books back to the library. So this was serious stuff. I also did it because, hey, it'd be cool for me, Steve Sims, wouldn't it? This big, tough biker guy donates his time in a prison to talk to hardened criminals. How cool would that be? So I did that. And when once you've gone through the 12th gate and all these gates are being slammed behind you, and one for either side of you are armed guards, and there are signs on the wall saying there are no warning shots, you know you're not in Disney anymore. You know this is a serious place. It changes you. And I went in there, and they were asking me questions. And a lot of these people, I joke, I called it the postcode lottery. A lot of these people never had a choice. When you are 8 years old and your parents are giving you a parcel and telling you to drop it off to Uncle Richie, you know, on your way to school, you do it. You don't know you're walking along with half a kilo or something, you know, that shouldn't be in your pocket. You just don't know. And then you don't fit in. And gangs come along and go, hey, fit in with us. We'll be your family. We'll have your back, you know? And you don't have a choice. And so I got to speak to some amazing people. And then at the end of it, they came up to me and they went, so if you like what we're doing, if we could ask you to make a donation, you know, $100 or, you know, whatever you could do to help us continue. And what they did was they run through a training program that restructured who you were. So it re-engineered what all your skill sets were and then realigned them to where they should be. So like, for argument's sake, you had guys that were running huge drug empires, you know, making 10 million a month. And they had, as the military, they had their unders. They had the who they delegated to. They had their foot soldiers. They had this. Now, if you think of a Fortune 500 company, it was exactly the same structure. They knew about communication. They knew that you didn't talk to that person because it was a line of command. You know, they had, but they grew that education through running a drug empire. So these were really smart people. They had just gone down a different route. And these were called EITs, entrepreneurs in training. Within an hour of me being in this prison, it changed me forever. I realized for a start how damn wealthy I was. Okay, because when I exited that place, and these aren't pretty, you know, they ain't the Four Seasons. You walk out, the grass is greener. The air is fresher. The sky is bluer. I can go home and order a steak. I can go home and drink my cocktails. I can do anything I want, okay? And they were asking me for $100. So then I went back, and I spoke to Andrew, and I went, that's got to change. You've got a broken system there. I said, you're giving and then saying, hey, could you pay us now, please, if it's okay, whatever you wish. That's the wrong way of doing it. You give someone, you changed me. You brought me in there to help speak to inmates, to give them hope, to give them guidance for when they were getting out. But it was the other way around. I made more out of it. So I said, I want to play. I want to get involved in this. I want to adopt this. So what we did was we changed it. I actually take people into prison. I've been doing this for 3 years now. I take entrepreneurs into prison, and you have to donate $500 per person to Defy Ventures. If you pay $500, so this doesn't come to me. I make no money out of it. If you pay there, I will take you out the night before with all of the other attendees, and we'll have a last night of freedom drink. And I'll buy all the cocktails, and I do that, and we hang out. Then the following morning, we spend the entire day in prison learning, to be honest, what we are capable of. Now, we're there helping the EITs and the inmates become EITs while revealing so much more of what we're capable of doing and who we are and what we stand for. And it challenges us. It puts us in an environment that is so alien to us. I pray that most of us never see the inside of that fence unless it's with me in one of these events. Mm-hmm. Because you don't know what you're capable of until pushed, until made uncomfortable. And I'm very proud to say that in the space of 3 years, this year being a stupid year because we couldn't go in, next year I walk into my fourth year. But in the 2.5 years that we were doing it before COVID, I took in just over 100 entrepreneurs to actually work with him. And I've not had a single person not cry and not be changed. And there's no one that hasn't turned around and gone, that was one of the best days of my life. That was so groundbreaking. I can't believe it. And it's just been phenomenal. I am very devastated. Yeah, most people dream of going to the beach for a holiday. I dream of going back there. It's ridiculous that because of COVID, I've not been able to go into prison. What did you miss this year? Well, it was the Four Seasons. It was, you know, sitting in the Algarve. It was traveling to Japan. No. It was the fact that for about four times this year, I couldn't go to a maximum security prison and have myself challenged and have myself come out grateful for who I am and who I'm with. And it's been absolutely brilliant. But I will tell you a funny side note. When I first decided to do it this way, and I went online to Facebook and I went, right, I'm going to prison. I think I put something like, if you can't get hold of me tomorrow, it's because I'm in prison. Now, the amount of people that contacted me going, Steve, I don't care what you did. I've got your back. I'll look after Claire. And they were, thank you very much for the blind support, but it didn't surprise them that I was going to prison, which kind of upset me a little bit, you know? So that was it. Obviously, I've got a face that looks like it should be locked up.
That's, what an incredible story, though. Thank you for doing that, because we don't know what's going on behind that, and we don't understand what they really need. And I can't imagine how much that changed you. That's absolutely incredible. I do want to ask you a question. What kind of bike do you ride?
I'm glad my wife's not listening to this. Lots. We joke that I have a life-threatening disease. I buy motorcycles, and then my wife threatens my life. I'm really good, really, really exceptionally good at buying motorcycles, but I'm appalling at selling them. So we have quite a few. I've got old British ones. I've got Italians. I've got a bunch of Harleys. So I'm quite blessed. I've got we're actually building on the other side of the house, a larger garage just to be able to stick all the bikes.
That's awesome. I bought my first bike in 2009. It's a Harley 883. So it's nice. Just a small little Sportster, but yeah. My kids keep telling me, you don't ride it enough, just sell it. And I said, I'll never sell it. I'm never going to sell it. It's mine it's forever.
Yeah, they are good. They are glorious.
They are. Okay. I had tell me about this thing you like to do. Well, I think you spoke on it, teaching experience versus education. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Because I know one of our friends, she really pointed that out because she knows how much you love to do that.
The trouble is we can lose money tomorrow. Okay. Mm-hmm. We can lose our house. You could lose the motorbike. You know, we could lose our limbs. It's very easy to lose things. Okay. But it's very hard to lose memories. And memories are experiences, they're triggers. Now, how many times do you drive down the road and a tune will come on and it signifies a moment in your life? All of a sudden, you'll remember when you were at your prom. You'll remember when you were at the bar with your mates. You'll remember that was the song when your first baby was born, or your contract, or your first house, or your first kiss. You know, music is a great a trigger. Mm-hmm. And so what I try to do is I try not to give any gifts. I try not to oversaturate with too much that's not experiential. Because if I can feed an experience into you, now don't get me wrong, I'm not saying have you go and have tea with the Queen. If I sent you a letter, okay, and you weren't expecting it, that's an experience. Yeah. That's a trigger. You know, if I hand wrote on the front, if I put inside it a pretty little, or if I put inside it a Starbucks voucher going, hey, we're in COVID at the moment and I miss having a coffee with you. So here's a voucher, get yourself a coffee and think of me.
Oh.
Now think how much that would cost.
Yeah.
But think how many times they will think of you the next time they get a Starbucks. You know? And so, you know, all of these triggers, that's what people don't realize that experiences, and here's another daft thing, experiences have a phenomenal compound interest rate. Now, what I mean by that is that there's a friend of mine, Dan Sullivan, says your mind polishes the past. Now, if you think about your first car, okay, think about your first car you had, all right? You're probably sitting there going, oh, it was my first car. It was a piece of shit, really, but, you know, it was my first car. And you're all smiley about it, okay? At the time, you freaking hated it because it wouldn't start. You had to go to work and it wouldn't start, so you had to catch the bus. You own a car, but you're now paying for a bus. You know, things get polished. I had a client of mine that I actually arranged to drive a Formula One car in the south of France. I was living in Geneva at the time, so it was very, very close. And so I went over to see him. Now, this was a phenomenal experience, and it was actually a cold, cloudy day that he was actually driving this car around a racetrack. Now, if you don't know about race cars, the engines, those open cockpit race cars, the engines are behind you. So your bottom is 3 inches off of basically a rocket. It gets very, very, very hot in that cockpit. And the engines get very, 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 very hot unless they're actually going at tremendous speed. If you're not a professional race car driver, you don't know how to go that fast to keep the engine cool, okay? Oh, so it's a double problem. The good thing about this day was that it was a cold day, so it kept the engine cool, right? That actually worked in his favor. So he rode for the day. He didn't get over hot because of the air temperature had dropped. He wasn't driving far. So he had a fantastic time. Fantastic time. He actually got the chance to drive a Formula One car around a F1 French racetrack. Brilliant. Then I was at a cocktail party, I think like about 3 years later. And we were over in America at the time. And he starts telling people about this. And he started with, it was a beautiful day in the south of France. No, it wasn't. I remember getting there, and then I had a sweater on, and I remember I couldn't decide what sweater to bring, you know, hoodie, a little one, whatever. I remember going back to the car and getting both sweaters and putting them on because I was bloody freezing. I remember how cold it was. I remember how cloudy it was, you know? And it was at the time that we didn't have the iPhones to be able to do all the filters and stuff. It was just a horrible day, okay? Perfect for him for the experience, but not the blue day that he remembers, because his mind takes away the parts that maybe where it filters the memory. So if you can give someone an experience over the years, that will get compounded. And people go, oh, I remember when they used to send me loads of these coupons, you know, for Starbucks coffee. Oh, it was always, it just embellishes it. So if you can create a really good trigger, then that will stay there forever, can't be removed, and they'll always remember. I'll give you one that's really cool. If any of you are out there at the moment thinking of a Christmas, I don't know when this is being released. Is it being released before Christmas?
I can.
Well, whatever. Yes. You like. Well, yes. If you're listening to this and it's not Christmas, think of it for the next one. Magazines are going bankrupt, okay? Mm. So why don't you buy a subscription, a year subscription, which you can get for like $20 now, okay?
Yeah.
Of your client or a friend's favorite magazine. And then every quarter they get that magazine. And every quarter they will remember it's from you and they will think of you. And they will not be able to go past a newsstand without seeing that magazine, without thinking of the fact that you bought it for them. Now, would you prefer that, or would you prefer I just walked up to you and gave you a $20 note and went, there you go?
Mm-hmm.
You see, no, you put thought into it. You can't get over that. So, you know, I have a standing thing in my family that if I'm going to send anything to someone, I'm going to find that $15 to $20 mark, and that's the maximum I'm going to spend, you know, because you have to be more thoughtful. You have to think of things. So that's why I'm very much into the experience.
No, I really love that idea, the magazine subscription, because nobody gets those anymore. It's all online, so you don't get to like feel it and have that experience of having it. So I love that idea, and I have run into quite a few friends now who are about experiences. They don't buy any more crap. They actually want to go to a place to have that memory, and I think it's really memorable. So I really love that you said that. Okay, a couple more things. One of them I had to ask you was, a few more things. How do you balance everything that you do? Family, your community with the prisoners, your passions. How do you balance all that time?
So by not, I think, is the answer. There's been some weak parts of my relationship with my wife. There's been some weak parts of my relationships with my kids because I've been focused on making the money. Mm-hmm. And then I've realized, hang on a minute, that makes me rich, but it doesn't make me wealthy. Mm-hmm. Wealthy is being able to cuddle up with your family on a Friday night and watch your favorite movie with popcorn, you know, mm-hmm. and laugh and tell jokes with each other. So I was very fortunate enough to be able to catch those moments. And usually it was because my wife would yell at me. She taught me, hang on a minute, something's going wrong here. I could be very, very rich and be single, you know, so let's not do that. So it was always a balance. And I will say that probably prison had a lot to do with it, because I came out going, hang on a minute, does it matter if I'm driving, I don't know, a Ford truck or a Bugatti? Does it really matter? You know, does it matter? And also, who am I buying this for? Now, I'm a guy in a black t-shirt and jeans, always riding around on motorcycles. I don't have a car. But most people actually buy these things to impress you. You know, people start making some money. They get a fancy watch to impress you. They get a fancy car to impress you. You know, I don't care. I really don't. So I wanted to make sure that I was true. I was real. To me, your opinion does not matter. I'm not searching for it. If what I do can help you, great guns. But I'm not stood knocking on your door asking for your approval. Don't care. I need to make sure that I can approve of me and what I stand for. And so I started focusing on the priorities, which are your family. For your family to be a good priority, they've got to have enough money that the bills are paid. Once the bills are paid, then it's cuddle time. You know, so you really do learn that. I would definitely say that it took me into my 40s to be able to do that. But there were definitely times before that I was getting weak with the kids or getting weak with my relationship, because I would be out all the time trying to kind of network, which I'm terrible at. You know, always going to events to try and kind of bump into people. I was awful at it. But I learned the art of picking and choosing and going into an event with laser focus. And if there wasn't the person in there, I would go into an event and go, nope, no one's here, I'm gone. And I would come out, you know, it would just be ridiculous. But I learned how to balance by not being able to do it well.
Those are really great points, because I know that I've forgotten what time it was throughout the day to either eat or take care of my son. My son's 17, so he could do stuff on his own. But it's just the point that I should probably go spend time with him and not behind the computer, networking, making calls. There's got to be a cutoff time. And it's hard sometimes. And it took me a couple of years to finally realize I needed to be present. This can all go away, but my kids, you know, they need their mom. So it was hard. It's hard, especially when you are so focused on making money or networking. So I had to, I get it. It's just, oh my gosh. What about creative disruptors?
I came up with that name. I just thought to myself that, you know, an entrepreneur is a creative disruptor. You know, we want to find things, how they work, and then how can we make them work? How can we improve them? How can we tweak them? And you've got to be able to disrupt it. You know, for argument's sake, Richard Branson disrupted the airline industry with Virgin. He disrupted the record industry with Virgin Records. Elon Musk disrupted banks with PayPal. He disrupted the space industry. Bill Gates and Steve Jobs disrupted the way that we consumed information by giving us computers. So I found that people disrupt things, and you can't disrupt for the point of disrupting. You have to create, you know, and that's the point. So I always go, okay, creatively disrupt something, you know. Don't just go over and kick it over and smash it. That's destruction. That's not disruption. So creatively disrupt things in order to find a new way of doing things.
I love that. I love that so much. I'm so glad that you told us about that. In a couple more, one more question before we close this out, because we had some fans out there that wanted to know how you take your coffee.
It's true. A little dash of cream and one brown sugar.
Okay. And your favorite meal, especially during the holiday?
Ooh, favorite meal. Ooh. I would probably have to say steak, because we have to do it outside. I have an outside grill area. And whenever we do it, the family step outside of the house and we're all doing it together. So the steak is great, but I have my entire family with me around the grill, drinking and chatting and listening to music. So the ambience, I reckon I could become a vegetarian and I would end up doing vegetarian steaks just to recreate that experience. So it's significant. Whenever steaks are done, everyone steps out of the house and we all kick around the grill. So that's what I like.
That's lovely. I love that. Oh my gosh. Well, Steve, sir, I really appreciate your time. I want you to tell us really quickly about you have several different websites, but what is it with the Sim Speakeasy? That's your coaching program?
No, Sim Speakeasy is a private event I do. It's a maximum of 40 entrepreneurs. That's right. Only 40. They're cherry picked. So once you paid, you will get contacted to find out who you are, what you are, what's your problem. And if we can solve it, we accept it. If we can't, then we refund you and tell you we can't. That's our private events. And they happen about 3 times a year. This year, because of COVID, we only did it twice. We always do them in different cities. And you never know who's going to be there. And you never know what you're going to learn. So they're really secretive. That's why they're called speakeasies. But you can find everything about me on this website I see you've got here under stevedsims.com. You can join an Entrepreneur's Advantage Facebook group, find out about Sims Distillery, my coaching. You can find out everything there.
I love all the things. If we had more time, I would talk to you, I would talk to you about distillery and blue fishing and all that, because it looks all amazing. But I really appreciate it. I thank you so much for telling your story on who Steve Sims is, because it's so important to show people that, you know, this doesn't just happen overnight. We have to go through some stuff to get to where we are. Thank you so much. And I look forward to chatting with you some more again soon. Thank you.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
All we need is a little understanding. Walk a mile in their shoes. And if we keep our hearts open-minded, we'll enjoy this wild ride called life. And if we keep our hearts open-minded, we'll enjoy this wild ride called life.